What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
It's been 751 days since October 7th, 2023. Over two full years, y'all, with American support, Israel has murdered well over 80,000 Palestinians and injured nearly 200,000 others, most of them women and children. The ongoing siege has also created murder by starvation phenomena that has claimed the lives of nearly 500 people, including well over 150 children. The death toll in Gaza We know from researchers outside of the Palestinian Health Ministry that these numbers are likely an undercount. Here on Law and Disorder, we've spent the majority of Mondays of the last 2 years bringing you Palestine Post. We push back on the Israeli and U.S. mainstream media campaign of disinformation in its attempt to justify a genocide in order to maintain the status quo. We begin our hour with Tariq Kabash, co-founder of A New Policy. He resigned from the U.S. Department of Education in January of 2024 due to the Biden administration's policy on Gaza, good old genocide Joe, and its unrestricted support for Israel's aggression against Palestinians, in other words, the genocide. Good morning, Tariq.
Good morning, Kat. Thanks for having me back.
Well, things have changed and not changed since the last time that we spoke. Let's start with phases of the so-called ceasefire. From your perspective, where you sit on your perch, where are we at?
I mean, you know, it feels like a ceasefire in name only at this point, right? You know, the Israeli government has violated the ceasefire dozens of times just in the last, you know, couple weeks. And I think the Trump administration is doing its best to hold on to whatever they can claim as a victory for peace. And, you know, I think that as pressure mounts to try and maintain some sort of semblance of a ceasefire, I think there are some really, really concerning features that has allowed Israel to still bomb, albeit at much lower rates, significant parts of Gaza. We've seen the stoppage of humanitarian aid by the Israeli government. We've seen that Rafah has not really opened. We've seen people continuing to suffer from the lack of necessary food and water that is needed for millions of Palestinians in Gaza. And I think it continues to be a concern because at any moment, the quote-unquote ceasefire agreement could completely collapse and we could be right back to where we were, where, you know, much, much more violence could harm Palestinian civilians in Gaza.
And I think what's concerning about that is that this is exactly where we were before. Like, from, you know, where I sit, at least in this part of my allyship in demanding a free Palestine, I'm seeing the exact same signs, right? So the aid, I'm talking about the first ceasefire, for those on the air that can't see my fingers, there's air quotes, aid, right? Israel was supposed to let in aid. It's let in a trickle and it stopped it. This is where we are again. Bombing lessened, but it never quite stopped. This is where we are again. But I think perhaps for me, one of the biggest concerns in terms of a repetitive sign is the conversation around hostages. So the last time Israel didn't like the way the hostages were being released. They said not enough were being released. And then that was the justification, air quotes again, utilized for resuming the bombing. And perhaps even more concerning than that is that for those of us been following, we're clear that the bombing was at a level that we couldn't fathom for the first few days and ongoing, because it had escalated even the levels of the siege before the so-called first ceasefire, yeah?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think while all this is happening, we're also seeing rapid escalation in the West Bank in terms of annexation. In East Jerusalem, we're seeing, you know, the Israeli legislature, the Knesset, you know, pushing policies of, you know, the Israeli government formally annexing Palestinian land further, and we're seeing violence in increased levels by Israeli settlers in a way that is making Palestinians in the entire region a lot less safe. And you saw the Trump administration criticize even what the Israeli government is trying to do, which is, you know, like let's see what actually like comes of that. Benjamin Netanyahu essentially was like, yeah, you guys don't get to tell us what to do, as if, you know, the United States government was not responsible for funding tens of billions of dollars of Israel's weaponry to be able to commit the horrific war crimes that they have been engaging in for over 2 years now. So I think it remains to be seen, is Donald Trump going to let Benjamin Netanyahu push him around in the same way that Benjamin Netanyahu pushed around Joe Biden for as long as he did? Is J.D. Vance going to actually do more than just speak up and criticize Netanyahu and the far right parts of the Israeli government that are pushing to completely displace all Palestinians from their land? And we just don't know. We saw, you know, 46 out of 47 Democratic senators send a letter last week to President Trump, essentially saying, like, it's your responsibility to make sure that you actually ensure that the ceasefire holds. It's also your responsibility to ensure that Palestinians are not forced out of their land. And it's also your responsibility to ensure that there is a possibility for Palestinian statehood. And I think that's probably the furthest that we've ever seen Democrats and that type of a coalition go in their messaging. I think that's good. I think it's insufficient. And I think it's probably too little too late, because they're at a point where they don't have power. And where was this when Democrats did have power? You know, you can't just be the ones with moral spines when you have no ability to do anything with it. And I think that's kind of where we are right now. What is the Trump administration going to do? What are Republicans going to do to actually ensure real, long, and just and lasting peace for Palestinians and Israelis alike?
Well, you're feeling generous this morning. You called the Democrats having moral spines. Moral spines have been 200,000 breathing Palestinians ago. And I say that facetiously, but really, right? It is too little, too late. I am interested about this phenomenon in the West Bank. I am interested that this seems to be the collision course. From your perch, I mean, none of us have crystal balls that tell us what happens in the minds of fascists, but why you think the uptick in annexation, except, I mean, it's been happening for a minute, right? The Knesset passed the largest annexation policy in decades, you know, several months ago. Mm-hmm. But we're seeing that match with violence, right? We saw the policy pass, we saw the military invade, we're seeing people pushed out of their home. But every time I log on, right, there's horrific beatings of Palestinians in the West Bank, more and more violence. And it seems almost like replacement violence, right? So, okay, well, we can't bomb Gaza anymore. We'll just go ahead and do this over here. Politically, what do you think the move is here and why now?
I think because settlers want to see how much they can get away with, right? I think that for a really long time, there has been a level of impunity. There is this unequal access to just basic human rights for Palestinians, and settlers are arguably, I would say, the most extreme of this entire, like, pretty extreme population right now that are trying to say, like, we want this land, we are going to take it. We have protection from the Israeli military. We are getting essentially authorization from the current government, both through the legislature and from, you know, the far right parts of Netanyahu's regime. And they're saying, look, they did it in Gaza, why can't we do it here in the West Bank too? And let's see if we can get away with it. There's never really been real accountability for, you know, Israeli settler violence against Palestinians by the Israeli government. And, you know, even the Trump administration kind of rolled back the sanctions against Israeli settlers. That, like, the one thing that Joe Biden did in the last 2 years was, you know, say, like, okay, there is individual liability for these settlers and we are going to hold them accountable and we are going to sanction them as individuals committing terror against another group of people. And the Trump administration essentially waved that away. They said, nah, that's fine. And that is giving them this continued immunity to do whatever they want and get away with it. And that's really what this comes down to. So between that, between laws that are passing, between this, you know, entire vision for an expansion of, you know, Israeli, like, control of the land, you're seeing settlers act out with even more acts of violence more consistently, repeatedly. And I think that's why ultimately this happens. It may be a little bit because, the violence is wound down in Gaza, but I think these are separate groups of people. This isn't, I mean, there's cover from the Israeli military, but it's not the military directly engaging in these actions. These are individuals that are empowered by the protection that they are afforded by the government and by the military.
And actually, there have been clashes between the IDF and settlers recently, which I've found fascinating. All right, well, that's perhaps why I'm uptick in the violence there. Looking at why this is sort of the line for Trump, at least for today, right? Because today's line is tomorrow's nothing, and that seems to be what he promised the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, that this would not happen. Now, for folks that have been following the UAE normalized through the Abraham Accords, the relations with Israel in 2020, but they're saying the West Bank is too far. Why you think?
I think for a number of reasons, but first and foremost, I think no one wants to see the Palestinians entirely wiped out, right? I think that,
Except Israel.
yeah, well. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I do think that there is interest for Donald Trump in being able to claim like real victory with a peace deal. And the settler violence, the annexation and expansion into Palestinian lands further not only destabilizes the region, but it undermines his entire ability to say, we achieved peace for Palestinians and Israelis. And I think it's actually in Donald Trump's long-term interests as this deal maker, as this peacemaker, to be able to say that he actually accomplished that. Annexation undermines that entirely. It undermines his, other agreements with the UAE, with the Saudis, any other major players in the region. I think he's trying to make sure that he is, the mediator as such, and ultimately, when you're talking about mediation with, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, like the entire region is kind of being forced into a situation where, if the Israelis actually do succeed with real annexation, right now, I would say they're still succeeding with annexation, by the way. It's just less formalized, right? Like we're continuing to see the settler violence. We're continuing to see Palestinians be stripped of their land every single day. We're seeing new settlements being, propagated by the Israeli government. And this isn't ever really stopped. It's a de facto annexation, but there's not like a formal annexation that has been approved that everyone is like okay with. And I think that is really like the line for Donald Trump, like you said today.
Where in the, I call it the plan. I won't call it a peace plan because I think it's about building Donald Trump's next play city, in part, right? And because I think that no matter what happens, until there's an absolute free Palestine and Israel is gone, there will continue to be horror, daily horror, by Palestinians. Where in it, however, is the rebuilding phase? Like, when is this supposed to happen? Because people are coming back to their villages, but their villages are rocks and dirt and rubble.
Yeah, I think that the plan, as you kind of define it, is that some Palestinians won't be able to come back to their land. The way that Gaza has, in this plan, been kind of split is that there's already certain parts of Gaza that have been shrunk, where Palestinians are going to continue to be kind of pushed further in, and Israel is going to be occupying and taking over and building, more control over other parts of the region. And I think that's where a lot of, Donald Trump, Jared Kushner, Tony Blair's plan is going to be really this expansion, this rebuilding phase. And I think Palestinians will likely be left with, some crumbs. And that's assuming that the plan holds up, right? That assumes that it gets to the next phases where rebuilding can even be a possibility.
Every time I hear Tony Blair's name, my head explodes just a little bit, like that emoji on the iPhones. Remind my listeners why this war criminal is a problem for this transition, why Arab countries might be a bit concerned with him at the helm.
Because Tony Blair's historically been an architect for a lot of the problems that we've seen across the region, right? He was part of Iraq. He was one of the architects there, and I think that as you continue bringing back the same people with the same ideas in the same places, you're going to see the same types of outcomes that lead to devastation, that lead to, the further destruction of people's lives, the displacement of people from their homes. And at the end of the day, when you're, working on building a plan that ends in a Riviera for the most wealthy people to be able to access, the land of indigenous people, I think that's really concerning.
I mean, seriously, you're talking about like two of the world's historically most brutal and violent colonizers, colonial forces, past, present, and right, past, present, and presumably the future coming together to end violent colonization. Which is why this is so absurd. Tariq Abbas, there's stuff moving at the in the Palestinian government too that I'm wondering if you can help us unpack a little bit. The big headline this morning is that Palestinian President Abbas has appointed Hussein El-Sheikh as deputy. This is why is this happening? What does that mean? And why is Hamas upset about this?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is I think, there is going to be, we're coming to a head where, as the Trump plan continues to develop, you're going to see Hamas essentially giving up power in Gaza, and someone needs to be able to kind of oversee in a governing body, the entirety of the Palestinian people. And the head of the Palestinian Authority is Mahmoud Abbas. He is, he's been around for a long time. He's very old. I think as they are, as the Palestinian government is, continuing to play out and to develop into, a unifying body that oversees the entirety of the Palestinian people, that you're going to start to see more announcements of, preparing for transitions. You're going to start seeing, the activation of different parts of, the government, and the PA is, the functioning oversight in the West Bank. Hamas is in Gaza, but as you see Hamas, leave its role as governing, I think you're going to see some combination of the PLO and the PA essentially trying to establish a body that is going to govern the people of Palestine. And this also kind of coincides with more nations around the country, or around the world, sorry, recognizing Palestinian statehood. And so as that continues to be normalized, you're going to need someone to actually be the recognized government that is going to oversee the Palestinian people.
Tariq, you mentioned earlier, right, the Democrats have sent a letter. What bipartisan conversations do you see happening about what's happening in Palestine? We know that there were fractures inside of the Trump base, not because they have any moral barometer when it comes to murdering Palestinian children, but because of this American first rhetoric. I think there's now also concern about the midterms. They know that I mean, they know that they could lose like that could happen. They could lose one of the houses from where you sit in DC. What are you seeing in terms of Republican pushback?
Yeah, it's pretty minimal. Just to be honest about it, I think that Republicans are really taking their cues from the president. And insofar as he has a plan, they are going to back the plan, and they're good soldiers, and they're going to stick to that, even if it's to their own detriment. And it's not totally clear if it is at this stage, because right now, for all intents and purposes, and mainstream media, this issue is not as prevalent right now because there is a plan. There is a vision for peace, if that's what you want to call it. And that's something that I think Republicans and even a lot of Democrats want to be the reality, whether it is, whether if it is or is not, facts, right? And so when it comes to like a role of bipartisan pressure, I just don't think that's something that we're going to see, because Republicans are not going to put pressure on Donald Trump.
What haven't I asked you that Americans need to be paying attention to in this moment?
Keep talking about Palestine. Keep talking about the violations that we continue to see. Keep talking about the unequal treatment. Keep talking about annexation. Recognize that just because this issue is out of, you know, mainstream news when it comes to a day-to-day, and to be clear, I think it is not out for long. This is still something that needs to be discussed in the United States every single day. The Palestinian people continue to see horrifying crimes committed against them in the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, in Gaza. And it's our responsibility to be able to shift what is happening here in the United States that has facilitated a lot of these horrible realities that Palestinians are living with. So,
Tariq Abbas, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much, Kat.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.